DC Public Library. Thank you for coming tonight. Paul's here tonight, and he's going to talk about Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln. Please join me in welcoming Paul. Thank you very much.
Lincoln has his second inauguration. We're here in Washington. Have folks gone to an inauguration before? Have you guys tried to bear the crowds in the last two? 2008 was really crowded. Well, that day in 1865, it was very muddy. It was rainy all morning. Lincoln's carriage is going down Pennsylvania Avenue. And all of a sudden, Douglass had this intuition that Lincoln was in danger. And his protectiveness came over Douglass, where he starts following behind the carriage, looking in the crowds for any hint of conspiracy. And then it gets to the Capitol, and Douglass is kind of like, oh, I don't know why that came over me. But that day in the crowd, John Wilkes Booth actually was sitting above Lincoln and watching the inauguration. So all three men are there, really within a few yards of each other, outside the Capitol. And Lincoln actually, people that were protecting Lincoln were actually scared about this too. He had gone to the Capitol that morning. He wasn't even in the carriage. But I love Douglass's protectiveness, and Douglass wasn't wrong. Lincoln was in very mortal danger in the weeks ahead. And so Douglass listens to Lincoln's speech. Lincoln's second inaugural, it's thought of now as the greatest sermon in American history. But for Douglass, he was hearing the themes he had talked about a few years before. He was hearing a president express them in his inauguration speech about considering, you know, all this blood that had been lost in the Civil War. Why? What was God's purpose for all of this? And was there a greater redemption for our country that this was happening for? And those kinds of themes had been part of Douglass's writing and thinking, and so it was unbelievable for him to hear that. And he understood the greatness of that speech before anyone else did. A lot of people kind of just panned it at the time. Now we know it's, like I said, our greatest sermon. It's not a political speech, it's a sermon. And so that night, Douglass decides, all right, I want to go to the inaugural reception at the White House. A black person had never gone into one. But that's Douglass. He's going to break down barriers, and he's just going to do it. And he asked a bunch of friends, will you come with me? And they're like, no, but we're really glad you're doing that. And so he goes, all right. So he waits in line, and then he gets to the front, and then the security at the White House would not let him pass. And they said they'd been instructed not to let anyone but white people come in. But Douglass doesn't back down. You know, he had done many things like this in Massachusetts when they were going through their desegregation work that was the subject of my father and I's first book. He had done sit-ins on trains. We're talking 1840s and 50s, not 1950s and 60s. Douglass had done this stuff, and so he said, you know, if Mr. Lincoln knew I was out here, you know, he just would not allow this. And so he was. So they said, oh, okay, come follow us. And they kind of actually tried to trick him and lead him out through another exit, to which Douglass just starts screaming, and he's just not leaving. And someone was passing by that he kind of knew, and he's like, send word to Mr. Lincoln that I'm out here. And it works, and sure enough, someone comes and grabs him, brings him in. He's looking at this sea of luxury in the East Room of all these people, and then there's Lincoln in his grand simplicity standing in the middle like a pine tree. And Lincoln makes eye contact with him immediately. They see each other. He kind of waves him over, and he says in front of everyone, here comes my friend Douglass. So remember at the beginning I talked about Stephen Douglass trolling him, that's his friend? He says that in front of the entire reception. And Douglass takes his hand. He says, I'm glad to see you. I saw you in the crowd today. He had noticed Douglass. Listening to my inaugural address, how did you like it? And Douglass responded, Mr. Lincoln, I must not detain you with my poor opinion when there are thousands waiting to shake hands with you. And Lincoln replied, no, no, you must stop a little, Douglass. There is no man in the country whose opinion I value more than yours. I want to know what you think of it. And Douglass said exactly what he felt. Mr. Lincoln, that was a sacred effort. So a month later, Lincoln would be dead. And Douglass would live for three more decades, continuing to fight new battles, fight the same battles, but fighting, 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 and always trying to make sense of Lincoln and trying to understand him and express to Americans who he thought Lincoln was based on only three meetings, but that were so powerful. Because across this great racial chasm, Lincoln and Douglas courageously talked. And so whatever shortcomings Lincoln might have possessed as a reformer, Douglas felt that thankfulness towards the president. Lincoln shared in the prejudices of his era, but he wasn't paralyzed by them. And I think at least that much we should be asking of ourselves. Lincoln went into the war not intending to free people from slavery, but he didn't step away from the challenge. When the opportunity and the tides of the war presented it and demanded it. And so he did it with wisdom and with political skill. And so Douglas felt that Lincoln had moved with the currents of history, and on the surface that's faint praise, but a lesser man in Lincoln's position could not have accomplished the imposing and unlikely task of freeing enslaved people in the midst of 4 years of total war. Lincoln's innate distaste for slavery created an equally clear reality. He did not regret ending slavery or having been by circumstances an active agent in its demise. Lincoln never saw any conflict in having been thrust by history into ending an institution that he abhorred, even as he was frank in admitting that he had never harbored any intention to be this agent of world historic change. So these three meetings of Lincoln and Douglas, admittedly, those are small moments in this centuries-long unfolding of the trial of race in America. But we think that this relationship, in its complexity, in its honesty, it still offers an example of engagement and argument and honesty. There's no need to sentimentalize it. To claim that they were friends or to claim that Douglas somehow made Lincoln into, quote, the great emancipator. They met not as friends, but as men able to talk. And this relationship, and exactly in its twists and frustrations, it shouldn't be left behind. It should be remembered because it's instructive for a divided America that we still have. And the greatness of Lincoln is that he did, with patience and skill and unwavering firmness, accomplish his mission to save our country from fragmenting. He saved our nation, and in doing so, in saving the Union, he preserved the soul of democracy for the model that would go all over the world. And so Douglas's greatness lies in accomplishing one of his great missions, the end of slavery and the arming of his people in the fight for their own emancipation. But I think an equally impressive greatness for Douglas is what he could not have fully achieved in his lifetime, but he envisioned what he saw 150 years ago, and that was full citizenship and simple equality. And so he hands that mission to us. For in any ways that we see that is curtailed, that is pushed back on, that is not fully realized, that's Douglas's mission for us to take forward. And for however long it will take, that's our mission to realize it. Thank you guys so much.